to have me here in the studios of Bonta Style Radio. And I just want to say, just as a president, you are welcome.
Thank you.
Let me quickly indicate that he is being accompanied by a high-profile delegation. Let me quickly acknowledge the presence of the Volta Regional Minister, Ms. Helen Agua-Kotoso, and the Minister of Communications, Dr. Omane Buama. You are all welcome. To. Well, the President, you have been here on a 5-day tour. You have not completed. I know you have a lot of scenery to do. So far, how has it been like in your campaign tour?
It's been very, very, very well received. We have visited several constituencies, starting from the northern part of the region and moving downwards. Yesterday, we're working in the middle part. And everywhere we have gone, we have been received by, enthusiastic supporters, by chiefs and opinion leaders. And we've interacted with them, and the response has been very, very positive. And so I feel very encouraged.
Well, okay, thank you so much for that, Excellency.
Thank you, sir.
It is being agreed in some parts, or school of thought says that the Volta region is supposed to be a World Bank of the NDC. Since they've been voting massively for a party since 1992. However, some critics opine that the region has been neglected in terms of development. How will you respond to that?
The reality does not support that. What I call political propaganda, I mean, it's obviously initiated by persons who want to drive a wedge between the NDC and the Volta region who make that statement. Everywhere I've gone, projects, development projects from the health sector to education to roads to water to electricity, are ongoing. The chiefs themselves, testify to the good job that has been done over the last 4 years. Let me just give you a few statistics. In the road sector, in the highway sector alone, not urban roads, not feeder roads, highway sector alone, we have completed or have ongoing projects worth 1.2 billion Ghana cedis. 1.2 billion Ghana cedis. About 300 million or more is in the area of Cocoa Roads. And then more than 700 million is in the area of enhanced road fund projects and GOG projects. And some of the roads have been completed, others are ongoing, but you can see massive investments in the road sector. If you take urban roads, from Keta to Hohoi to Ho to several other, communities, Kejibi and others, we're starting, some we finished, some are ongoing, some we're just about to start. The urban road network, to give an uplift to these major urban centers in the Volta region. If you take feeder roads, there's so many feeder roads we're working on in order that we stimulate economic activity and bring, agricultural products to the central markets and things. And that's only in the road sector. If you take the water sector, just in 2012, the total water, clean water access in Volta region was 39%. Today, as I speak to you, access to clean drinking water in Volta region is 72%. And so from 2012 till now, we've raised, access to clean drinking water for people in the Volta region, by a whopping, more than 30%. And there are still several water projects ongoing, which when we complete would even take Volta region's water coverage to much higher than the national average. For instance, in rural water supply in the Central Tongu area, that includes Central Tongu, North Tongu, Agotin, Isiope, and Adaklu, we finished phase one and we're working on phase two. Phase two is to deliver extra pipes to be able to bring the water all the way to Adaklu. We have the UNICEF project, which we've implemented in Keta Municipal, Ho Municipal, Biakuya District, Kejibi District, Kwando Municipal, all to extend clean drinking water. Then we have the Korean project, which is Koika Wash, to expand water to Kachi, Nchumuru, and other areas. This has been completed, and so they have more water. We have the GOG Rural Water Project, which is the Tongo Malime Water Supply Project in the South Dai District. That also has been completed. There's a debt swap, that's a Spanish project, which covers several districts. And then we also have the Akachi South Water Supply Project. So, the statistics do not support that contention, and I don't think that our people should fall for that propaganda.
Thank you very much.
We did a book called The Accounting to the People, which is a national document that we have circulated far and wide. I'm happy to note that the Volta region has also done its version of the Green Book, also called Accounting to the People, Volta region version. And I will ask you, the media people, to lay hands on this book. And once you go through this book and you see the amount of work and investment that government has made in the Volta region, I'm sure that that propaganda would crumble.
Okay. Thank you very much, Excellency. But earlier on, you touched on some roads that have been done and those that are ongoing. But this particular stretch of road, as the Eastern Corridor Road, has been in the news for some time now. But it seems the portion between Basa and Damanko stretch seems to be still a little bit not completed. Any reasons for its delay?
The road is one of the longest stretches of road in Ghana. It's 727 kilometers long. That is, if you want to put it in context, it's three times the distance between Accra and Kumasi. Going to Accra and Kumasi three times. That is how long that road is. And we have segmented the road, and it's being worked on by different contractors. Of course, you know, different contractors have different capabilities. There are contractors who, when they work and raise two certificates, they demobilize and sit and wait till they are paid before they continue. But when you do that, then it makes the work not progress the way it should. And so work is progressing at different paces on the different parts of the road. One of the important parts is the Asikuma to Havi area, where work is at about 50% completion and still ongoing. And then recently we awarded again the Havi to Hohoi part. And that one, work is 60% complete. And the contractors assure us that by the end of the year, they will substantially have completed large segments of those patches. But aside from that, it is the whole stretch from Kulungungu, you know, to Nakwanduri, and then from Nakwanduri through Gushchegu to Yendi, from Yendi through Bimbila to Damanko. And that is the part that is being worked upon by the Brazilian contractors. Aside from that, you come from Damanko and then come all the way down to Mkwanta, from Mkwanta to Dodipepeso. From Dodipepeso, you come down to Kajabi and then to Jasikai and then to Hohoi, Havi, Asikuma, and all the way down through Atimpoku to Tamaranabout. And so that's the stretch of road we're talking about. It will stimulate economic activity in 26 districts, because it cuts through 26 districts from north to south. And so we are committed to completing it. I'm sure that by end of the year, into the first quarter of next year, the major critical parts will have substantially been completed. And as they get completed, we'll commission. We've already commissioned the part from the Dodipepeso to Mkwanta. And that road is first class. Commuters are using it. On the parts that they are working, the contractors are making sure that they keep traffic flowing and they keep the road where I was coming down yesterday. I was pleased to note that on the Harvest stretch, they have laid the 040. 040 is crash rock mixed with cement that they lay before they put the asphalt on. So it means that the contractor is ready to start putting the asphalt on the road. And so he's blocked one side and opened one side to traffic. And so I'm happy with the progress of work that is taking place. And it's my hope that we will complete as soon as possible. So I can assure the people who are living on the stretch from Damanko all the way to Dodipepeso, that stretch of road is going to be done. Indeed, I asked the Ministry of Highways to terminate the contractor if the progress of work on that section of the road. And we have several even Ghanaian contractors who have the capacity to be able to do this kind of work. And so if that contractor is not showing any action on the road, we will terminate him and we'll re-award it to another construction company.
Thank you very much, Excellency. Just a couple of months ago, you came to the Port Authority here, and we're privileged to host you here once again. And we just talk about what the people are section calls the Abeho Airport, but on that particular day, I recollect you told me it's an aerodrome, not an airport. Since then, what has been...
Airport, aerodrome, whatever it is, please can land on it.
What is the state of it now?
Phase 1 is almost completed. Phase 1 is the runway, which is the most important thing an airport can have. So it's the runway and the apron. And Phase 1 is almost complete. Indeed, they believe that by end of this month into the first part of next month, the runway should be completed and a plane can land in Ho. Phase 2 is the terminal building, which they are going to begin almost immediately. So work is progressing very steadily.
Thank you very much once again.
Maybe the next time I come, I will.
You tell me you finish.
I'll come in a plane and I'll come and take you back with me to Accra.
Thank you so much in advance. But, Your Excellency, we've had so much talk for a very long time about this Volta Basin Oil Exploration at Qatar.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we were said that it was some survey or something was being done. So yeah. What has become of it now?
VRE is going through the procurement. What VRE has to do is to get an international partner to work with them to do the Volta Basin survey. We do believe strongly that there's something there looking at the aerial and seismic data. And so they have to, you know, the procurement laws, you can't just get up and choose anybody to come. You have to find the most technically suited person. And so I know that they're going through that process. And as soon as the partner is chosen, they'll hit the ground. They want to drill what they call test pits, test holes. And so they know how many test holes they want to drill across the basin. And so once that is done, they'll come and start taking the samples, drilling the test pits. And we all should keep our fingers crossed and hope that, you know, they'll find something. Sorry, GMPC. Did I say VRE?
Just VRE.
Sorry, GMPC. GMPC. GMPC is responsible for exploration. Yeah, so it's GMPC.
But we also learned that there was a proposed harbor to be at Qatar, still in the southern part of the Volta region. Is this still in the pipeline?
People have talked about the harbor. Before you can build a harbor, you need to do a feasibility study. There is no feasibility study done. And so I announced and we put in our manifesto that we're going to commence the feasibility of a deep sea port in Qatar. And so that commitment has been made.
Thank you very much. And do you envisage any establishment of any industrial zones in the Volta region? Since, you know, it's a very long region from, I mean, the Qatar to Karachi, from the, I mean, let's see, to the savannah.
Yeah.
Have you envisaged, I mean, doing some industrial zones or locating industrial zones on this long stretch in the region?
Yes. It's something that we are looking at. Industrial zones, not only in the Volta region, but, you know, across the whole of the country. And so, if you look in our manifesto, we have captured the various development authorities in our manifesto. And one of the authorities that we're talking about is the one that covers the Volta area. When you look at location of industries so far, a lot of industries have liked to be located close to the ports so that they bring their imports in easy and then take their exports out. And we gradually are looking at setting up additional industrial zones so that some of these industries can move out and create employment in areas that are non-traditionally, you know, covered by industries. For instance, when you're coming from Accra, you get to Dawa, there's a new industrial zone being developed, and that's a purely private sector operation. It's a private company doing it. And so government is looking to do some under PPPs, so that government will partner with the private sector to set up these industrial zones. We know what the attraction for industries are. You must have sufficient power. And so one of our main focuses has been stabilizing the power situation. You must have sufficient water. because some of the industries use a lot of water. You must be near a port so that you can export. Happily, we have the Tema port being expanded, and from the Volta region, accessing Tema port is still not too far away. And we've done the road network very well. And so if you leave somewhere in southern Volta, you should be able to be in Accra in 2 hours, you know, maximum. So it's looking good. And it's something that we'll continue to push. Aside from that, we're looking to promote agro-based industries because we're looking to diversify the economy and invest heavily in expanding Ghana's agricultural exports. And so we're looking at palm as one of the options. We're looking at coffee. And Volta region has been identified, you know, to promote all these products. We're looking at expanding cocoa production again in the Volta region. Volta used to produce quite a lot of cocoa, but over the years, the quantities have dwindled. And so we set up seedling banks, mini seedling banks, all over, so that we can give free seedlings to the farmers to be able to plant their crops. But already some private sector, we're encouraging some private sector operators to move into the Volta region. So for instance, in North Togo, recently we have Musha Hamat Farms, which is a big operation in terms of producing foods for export. And that has created huge numbers of jobs in the North Togo area. I'm sure that there are many other such private sector companies that are interested in expanding. Volta region has beautiful, fertile lands, you know, for agricultural production. And increasingly, it is becoming a major producer of rice in Ghana. Indeed, Volta region is overtaking the north in rice production. And so we are encouraging, you know, expansion of rice production. We are going to re-engineer the irrigation projects around the Afife area and all those areas in Adidome area, you know, expand rice production, put in additional rice processing mills. Already we have two that have come up, private sector rice mills, that are producing high quality rice for the Ghanaian market. I've said that by 2021, we should be able to be self-sufficient in rice production. From 2008, we're producing about 301,000 tons of rice per year. As I speak to you, this in 2015, we produced 604,000 tons of rice. That is double. And I believe that by 2021, we should be able to push that up to 1 million tons, which is approximately, you know, what Ghana's demand for rice is.
Thank you very much. Please don't forget that we are live on our mother station, Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Ogbonu FM 96.5 in Tema. We're also on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, we're in Secondary Talk at the Twin City Radio 94.7. Turn our attention to education. We learned that under the administration, this issue have come up of converting the polytechnics into technical universities. And I think this is meant to reorient students to acquire technical skills for job employability. But efforts are being made to provide workshops and laboratories and so on for these institutions, particularly I mean the voter and talk about the whole technical university really.
Yeah. Because of the intention we have had, we have aggressively accelerated the provision of infrastructure in all our polytechnics in readiness for the conversion to technical universities. And so if you go to our polytechnics, I mean recently in most of the regions I've gone, I've been commissioning their new technical workshops, and we've also installed equipment that they call a Machol. It's produced by a US company that gives them all the test bench equipment they need for sending the students through practical training in different kinds of the technical areas that they require training. And so we have put in a lot of investment. I think that the polytechnics are ready. We set up a committee to assess them and look at what their readiness for conversion is. The committee that did the first assessment selected 6 of them, and with additional work that was undertaken in 2 more of them, that is Cape Coast and Tamale, they've been included with the other 6 for conversion. The only 2 that we need to work on are Wa and Bolga, and we're going to do a lot of work to bring their infrastructure up. So government is going to invest a lot of money in their infrastructure to bring them up to the grade of converting to technical universities. We're also going to give their faculty scholarships to go out and upgrade themselves so that they can come back and strengthen faculty so that they can make that transition. But I want to congratulate Poly for having qualified, and we sent the bill to Parliament. It's been approved. It has come back to me as President. I have assented to it, so I've signed it officially into law, and so they can actually begin to call themselves technical universities. But I think it will officially kick off this academic year. I want to congratulate Cape Coast Poly and Tamale Poly too for having qualified, and so they've been included in the convention. And I want to tell Wa and Bolga that we're going to work with them strongly so that in the next year or so we can convert them also into technical universities. Business and industry is requiring new skills, and we need to rejig our academic system so that we're providing the kind of skills that industry and business need. Before, it was attractive to have a grammar education because most of those who were employed into the public service were needed as clerks and other such occupations during the colonial times and early independence. But now, with industrialization taking place, with the oil and gas industry opening up, with agricultural investments open up, they are looking for agri technicians and agri engineers. They are looking for oil and gas technicians and engineers. They are looking for welders. They are looking for electricians and things like that. And so we must reject the academic system to start producing more of such people for industry and business. And that is why government is taking the steps that it's taken, not only in converting the polytechnics, but also in bringing up the secondary technical schools. And so recently, under a program called DSIP, which is the African Development Bank program, we are upgrading one technical school in every region to a first-class standard. We also identified two polytechnics that we are upgrading, and then one other tertiary institution. And so we're putting in a lot of investments to be able to upgrade our technical training and vocational education programs. Aside from that, with the new Community Day Senior High Schools we're building, I announced that 30% of them will be technical oriented. And so we're giving them technical workshops. That will be about 60 out of the 200 will give technical courses so that we can produce more of these technical graduates for the world of work.
Thank you very much, Excellence. But oftentimes, when we have this, specialized institutions, for all you know, before you know, they change into running some courses which perhaps were not prescribed for them. How do we solve that?
Indeed, we have told the polytechnics that we want the core training to be in technical and vocational, and a reduction in humanities. I'm sure that the law would have captured, you know, that, and so they will be guided by that principle. In the past, because of competition, everybody wanted to introduce courses where they could pull in more students, but we have asked that they stick to their core mandate, which is technical and vocational training, and I'm sure that that's what will happen.
Thank you very much. We are all too much aware in the Volta region, you're commissioning some of these e-blocks, especially called the e-blocks.
Yeah.
But I'm relatively selfish here. Is the Volta region expecting more?
Yes. Indeed, everybody has a fair share of the e-blocks. And I commissioned the one in Kwame Krum, which is in the Biakuyen district, and then also the one at Chinderi. Indeed, the Chinderi one, the day we commissioned it, the students were already moving into the school because they were in a community secondary school which was so dilapidated. I said I've seen schools under trees, but it's mainly been restricted to basic schools. This is the first time I saw a secondary school under trees, you know. And really, physically, some of the students were studying outside. They had their desk and everything outside under the tree, and they were studying under the trees. So the day we opened the Chinderi school, that same day the school moved into the new premises. So that was a good thing. We also did the Manta South one, and that is also populated, and teaching and learning is going on. here we have available, ready for commissioning, Avenopeme, Volo, and also Bata North. But there are several others at different stages of completion. What I've told the Ghana Education and Services, when they are completed, they should populate them with students. We expect that this academic year, 42 of those schools will take in students. And by the end of the year, we should have completed close to 70, we're hoping. And so this academic year, 42 can take in students. Indeed, in the new computer placement exercise that took place for basic school students entering secondary school, the placement included some of the new community based senior high schools. So students were placed in those schools under the computer placement system. And so it's a good sign, and I'm very enthusiastic about it.
Thank you. But we look at, the student-teacher, ratio, because like we are raking in more students. We have the teachers.
Yes.
To demonstrate it.
We have plenty of teachers. We're training so many teachers. And so I don't think that would be a problem. Traditionally, the problem we've had with student-teacher ratio has not been in the number of teachers, but it has been in how spread they are across the country. In the past, many people didn't want to go into the rural areas. But that's where the vacancies are now. And so if we are employing you as a teacher, you must be willing to go to the districts and some of the rural areas to go and teach. A lot of these community-based senior high schools we are building are in typically rural areas. And for those that we have built and populated, I am satisfied that they have the right teaching staff, and will continue to do that. Recently, we have started the recruitment of over 2,000 maths and science teachers. And so as we go along, we continue to recruit more. We have many student trainees in colleges of education, and as they pass out, we'll continue to post them to these schools. So I don't believe that there will be a problem with the teacher-student ratio.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency John Dramani Mahama. Please don't forget that we are also live on our sister stations, our private stations, Global FM 105.1. We also have the Premier Live on 98.1 or Cool FM 103.5, then Kikeli Radio 102.9, Tosh FM 103.9, and in Akachi we are on Kaleo FM 100.7. And don't forget we also have Kachi FM. Up now there, our sister station, the Catch FM. That was there, our 95.5. Well, if we can continue from there, you have to listen. What is the status of the National Health Insurance Scheme of now? There are some critics are suggesting that it is abandoned to a halt. Your reactions?
I think that the National Health Insurance is one of the greatest social intervention programs, you know, that this country has benefited from, and government certainly will ensure that the National Health Insurance does not grind to a halt. What has happened is in 2005, when the National Health Insurance Bill was presented to Parliament and passed, the actuarial studies that accompanied the bill suggested that the National Health Insurance, the way it was structured, and the sources of revenue that it was going to take would last up to 10 years, and that after 10 years we needed to find new sources of financing for the health insurance. And so if you remember that the bill was presented in 2005, last year was 2015, that's 10 years. And so it means that new sources of funding must be sought to put into the health insurance in order that it can continue to be robust. It has grown phenomenally beyond anybody's expectation. I mean, nobody expected that, it would grow so huge, you know, and be so utilized. In 2008, outpatient utilization of the National Health Insurance was 9.3 million visits. When I say outpatient utilization, it doesn't mean that 9.3 million people used it. It means that the visitations to hospital were 9.3. Somebody would have gone thrice. Carefully, you would have gone twice. Carefully, I went once, and somebody didn't go at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there were 9.3 million visitations to hospital utilizing the health insurance. In 2014, that figure rose to 29 million. And so it shows that the use of the health insurance has expanded phenomenally. In 2008, total claims payment from across the country, all health facilities that attended to National Health Insurance patients, was 183 million. In 2014, the claims payments that were made to health facilities across the country for treating National Health Insurance patients was over 1 billion Ghana cedis. And so if you look at the growth in claims payment alone from 183 million in 2008 to over 1 billion in 2014, then you can see the phenomenal growth that has taken place in the health insurance. And so the suggestion I've made as president, and I've captured it in our manifesto, is that the new source of funding that we must identify must come from the ABFA, that is the annual budget funding amount. The annual budget funding amount is an amount that is brought into the budget from our crude oil and gas exports or sales. And so I'm suggesting that a portion of that amount, maybe 10%, should be taken and put into the National Health Insurance so that they can continue to give good care to our people. Government, a lot of time, the thinking is that government is not transferring the NHIS value-added tax into the system, but that's not true. A lot, the system has reached saturation because of the sheer numbers, and so we need to find a new source of funding, and I believe that if we use a percentage of the ABFA, we would extend the life of the health insurance for maybe more than another decade.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll be taking a short musical interlude, but don't forget we are live on Garden City Radio 92.1 in the Shanto region, Radio BAR on 93.5 in the Bunawa region. We're also on Radio Savannah 91.2 in the Northern region. We're also live on Radio Upper West 90.1. And we're also on Rural Radio, that's 89.5 in Upper East, and so on. We take a short musical interlude and we'll be right back.
Minutes past 9 is the time, and this is Unique 95.7 MHz of the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation. You're listening to an interview between President John Dramani Mahama, the President of Ghana, and Kafui Kumaga, who is our colleague there in Volta Star Radio. The President is in the Volta region campaigning, and he's on Volta Star Radio, one of GBC's radio stations, and that was an interview. Let's go for a short break. We'll be back when we get the signals and everything is clear there from the Volta region.
Evan, radio with a difference. Unique FM.
Brothers, sisters, love each other. Never let go of one another. We all have different opinions, but that's what makes us who we are.
Unfortunately, certainly it's not enjoying the music, but I have to cut it off because we have to continue. But all that the music is saying is a song in honor that we're covering along with it. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
You are, they are behind you. That's what the music is saying.
Yeah.
So rest assured that some people are saying they are behind you.
It's a beautiful Bobo song. I love it.
Okay, then I'll give you a copy.
And I want to thank my friend Israel for composing it. He's got such good talent. Yeah, I've listened to him. I admire him very much.
Come on, Paradox, let's continue and let's look at economy and employment. We are seeing some level of micro stability in the Ghanaian economy, but unemployment seems to be a problem. We're talking about the nurses, unemployment saga, and so many others. How expectant are we towards its reduction?
I think that stability of the economy is occurring and is very visible. We have taken actually some very bold decisions to be able to stop the economic and create a more robust economy. So if you look at the current world's financial crisis, the headwinds that most countries are facing, Ghana's economy is showing more resilience and robustness compared to other emerging economies. We're a lower middle income country, and if you look at countries in our category, you find that Ghana is withstanding the economic headwinds much better than many other countries. China is slowing down. China is doing below 7% growth now. Venezuela is having difficult problems. Saudi Arabia, of all countries, is also facing financial crisis. Brazil is facing financial crisis. South Africa is in quite serious trouble. Nigeria is in recession. And so if you look at the stability and robustness that we're seeing in the Ghanaian economy, is commendable. And the significant thing is the discipline, you know, in our expenditures. People don't know it, but for the first time in history, we're running this economy without borrowing money from the central bank. We're doing zero central bank financing. And so it shows that it means the government is paying its expenditures from its own revenues instead of going to the central bank and taking money. Normally when you go to the central bank and take money, it's like printing money and adding more money into the economy. So that is something that we should take note of. Now, with a stable economy, we do investments in creating jobs. Government's principal responsibility is to create an environment for the private sector to grow and be able to absorb people. The whole public sector, that is people paid by the accountant general's payroll, the 600,000 people across the nation. So watchmen, teachers, nurses, doctors, you know, the president, myself, and everybody else paid, you know, from the consolidated fund, the 600,000. And so government's principal responsibility is to ensure that we facilitate the growth of the private sector so that it can absorb the graduates that are coming out of the different levels of schooling. And so we have so many initiatives that we are implementing. And in the new manifesto, I've said that we are launching an economic transformation and livelihood empowerment program. It's going to have several facets. That one provides our young people with the skills to be able to get jobs in the world of work. And then two, promotes entrepreneurship so that a lot of people would not see themselves as wanting to be employees, but will be able to set up business and be employers and run and employ people. And so, for instance, in the YES initiative, which is the Youth Enterprise Support Initiative, we committed a seed fund of $1 million. On National Youth Day, I went around and visited some of those who had benefited from the fund, and they're doing well. A young boy dropped out of primary school. He learned how to weld, do metal fabrication, and he set up a small workshop. He needed some machines to be able to bend the metal and all that. He couldn't afford it. And so under years, he was provided with 5 pieces of equipment. And so now he doesn't have to take his metal to other yards, pay for them to mold for them. He does all in his yard. And he's making fantastic progress. There's another one I visited who has gone into providing meat products and fish to restaurants and other facilities. And he needed a deep freezer, just a deep freezer, so that at the end of the day, if he had excess, he just puts it in to preserve it. And so he was provided with a deep freezer. He was giving money to build, you know, a shed to be able to do that work in a hygienic condition. And when we visited him, he had employed 3 people in addition to himself to do the deliveries of the meats to the restaurants and other places. So that's how you grow small businesses. And so with the YES Fund, we're going to give 100 million Ghana cedis over the next 4 years. That's 25 million Ghana cedis a year to be disbursed to young people. What they do is they advertise it. Young graduates who want to become entrepreneurs send a proposal to the YES office. and then they're invited to defend their proposal. If the proposal is selected by an independent board, it doesn't matter where you come from, it doesn't matter your political affiliation, if you are selected, they do a feasibility study for you. And if it's equipment you rent, the equipment is paid for directly, and you take delivery of the equipment, and then you're given small seed capital with which to start your work. So I'm impressed with what we're doing there. Aside from that, the IT sector is expanding. We're doing new technology packs. We're doing business process outsourcing. The last time I went to Tema in the technology park, there are two call centers already operating there. And in the first hall I went, there were 200 young people, you know, fielding calls from all over Papala, the world, and the call center. And so that is also providing employment. We have an agreement with Mauritius to set up a new technology park, Ghana Mauritius Technology Park, and that we're working on. And so once that is done, more technology-based institutions will open up. We've laid fiber cable, you know, on the Eastern Corridor from 2017 to 2021 by 400,000 young people. And so these young people, while in the youth employment, will have the opportunity to learn a skill and be able to go into the world of work. We're promoting investment in Paris, and so many quarries are coming up, private sector quarries. And because we've stepped up road production, road construction, quarries are getting a lot of business because the road contractors are buying chipping and other materials off them. So you can see there's an expansion in quarry business. If you're going to Accra, all along the side hills and everything, new quarries are coming up. So that's an area that is also expanding. We also are looking at all the old Nkrumah era factories that have collapsed, and we're trying to bring them back. We started with the Kumasi Shoe factory. It's working now. We went to the Kwenda Sugar factory. That is also working. We've given the shipyard and dry dock to Gapoha. And Gapoha is seeking investment to expand it and make it a state-of-the-art shipyard and dry dock. We've reformed Tema Oil Refinery, and today it's producing very efficiently. Indeed, a lot of products. We're even having to export some of Tema Oil Refinery's products to Burkina Faso, Mali, and this year every day 50 articulated tankers load diesel and petroleum products from Ghana to these three landlocked countries. And so a lot of work is going on. We're looking at the Abosso glass factory, because every piece of glass you see in Ghana here is imported, from bottles to liver blades to windows and everything, and yet we have the Abosso glass factory that can produce glass for this country. So we're looking at all those, you know, sectors, and we don't need to do it by ourselves as government. The private sector sometimes finds it difficult to raise the capital for such investment. So government leads and sets it up, and then we can hand it over to the private sector. For instance, the Kumenda Sugar Factory, we have advertised for a private sector partner to come and run the sugar factory in partnership with us. In Western region, there's a ceramic tile factory coming on stream, which will produce 40 million square feet of tiles a day. Currently, we import a lot of those tiles from China, and yet we have the material to be able to produce those tiles ourselves here. And so, with the private sector collaboration, Wang Kang Ceramics, you know, probably by the end of this year, will start producing ceramic tiles in Ghana. And so there's a lot of investment that we are undertaking. But probably what I'm excited about is the kickstart of the green revolution in Ghana. I believe that with the diversification of the crops that we're promoting, palm oil, coffee, and others, we won't be relying on a monocrop like cocoa. And so we'll have, you know, more alternatives. Aside from that, with the farmer service centers that we intend to put up, supports to farmers would be increased, they'll get improved seeds, so their productivity will go up, and it will make them able to produce more agricultural products, both for the local market and also for export. And so it's an exciting time we're going into. I'm very excited. I believe that Ghana's prospects are very bright. And aside from us, most people, even us, can see that Ghana is going to be one of the newly emerging African countries.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Recently, you were in the US of A, and you attended the UN General Assembly, and you made some very interesting statements there. For example, you said that Africa does not necessarily need assistance or partnership on a fair trading field. Can you expose this in relation to the benefit Ghana can derive from such an arrangement?
There are many obstacles to trade against Africa. Some of them, I'll categorize them into three. One, it will be phytosanitary. In many cases, countries in Europe and other places set phytosanitary standards so high that they make it difficult for African countries to export into their markets. So that's one of the things they use to exclude African goods from entering their market. That's the first one. Then the second one is subsidies that they give to their farmers. And so it makes our goods not competitive. Because, for instance, if they subsidize their poultry farmers, there's no way you can export poultry into Europe because you are not subsidizing your farmers. Or let's even take cotton. The countries that are the highest producers of cotton, like Burkina Faso, are suffering because America is subsidizing its cotton farmers. And so Burkinabe cotton finds it difficult to compete in the American market. So that's one of the other things that they use to kick us out. Then in other circumstances, they have quotas and tariffs. And so they'll slap tariffs on your goods, or they'll say that you cannot export more than 10,000 tons of banana into the European market. And so those quotas also restrict how much you can. And so when I got the platform and I was talking to the world, allow Africa to compete. Let us have a fair, you know, trading field. And Africa will rise up to the occasion because our farmers and producers can also produce at competitive rates. But then if you put all these barriers in the form of trade, and because of that, we're not able to stimulate production in our countries, and then you turn around and come and give me aid, you know, it doesn't make sense. And so what I was saying was that we don't need your aid. We don't need your sympathy. Create a fair trading, a level playing field, and let us compete. I mean, we can produce bananas, we can produce, I mean, all kinds of products, and we can export them into your market. But where you put all these restrictions, then it makes it difficult. At the end of it, if our budget is not implemented properly, or we are not able to get enough money for our budget, then you come and say, yes, budget support. I mean, what's the use of that? And that's the point I was making. I think it was very well appreciated, you know, but we need to fight in order to be able to access their markets. Or else then we also have to use some of those measures to retaliate. For instance, poultry, I talked about poultry dumping. In Europe, the most prized part of the chicken is the breast, the chicken breast. And so when they produce the chicken, they cut out the chicken breast, package it nicely, and send it to the restaurant and the supermarket. The rest of the chicken, the feet, the neck, and other things, the breast alone has paid for the chicken. And so the rest they can afford to give for free to anybody. So what they do, they package it, blast feed it, and then send it at, you know, a cheap rate into Africa. And so our farmers find it difficult to compete with that. And that's why we also have put some restrictions on poultry imports in terms of quotas. And in addition to, we've increased the tariff on imported poultry so that it gives our own poultry producers a fighting chance to be able to feed our local market.
Thank you very much. But what is hindering, I mean, intra-Africa trade itself? Because we start talking about the PPP. Our entry into the European, I mean, markets.
We are making a lot of progress with regards to intra-African trade. Currently, it is estimated at 11%, which is low, but it has risen. It used to be below 8%. And so it continues to rise. The main problem with intra-African trade is trade barriers. Most of our countries rely for revenue on customs duties and levies. And so it is difficult for them to give up, you know, levy customs duties, because then it would affect the revenue that goes into their budget. So that has been one of the major problems. But let me give you the good news. The good news is that at the last AU meeting, East Africa and SADC are ready to start the Continental Free Trade Area. I've been the head of the High Level Trade Committee of the African Union, and so I've supervised, you know, a lot of the work that has gone into creating a Continental Free Trade Area. And SADC and East African Community are ready, and so we agreed that they would start the Free Trade Area, and then we will, ECOWAS will join. ECOWAS is the next sub-region that is ready, and so East Africa and SADC will begin, and then ECOWAS will join as soon as we're ready. Now, what we've done in ECOWAS is we've agreed on the common external tariff, and so with the agreement on the common external tariff, then it makes it easier for us to move into a customs union. And so ECOWAS is seen as the sub-region that will be next ready. And so we've asked SADC and EAC to commence. We hope that by 2017 we should have a free trade area in those two. And then anytime between 2017 and 2019, ECOWAS will be able to join, so that we can take away tariffs on any goods that are moving between our two countries. Already we are experimenting in West Africa, and so we have what we call the ETLS, ECOWAS Trade Liberalization Scheme. If your product has more than 60% of local raw material, that is raw material sourced locally, then you can export it into another ECOWAS country duty-free. And that is one of the reasons why, for instance, we have a company like Dangote exporting cement into the Kenyan market, because they are using the ECOWAS Trade Liberalization Scheme rules to export into our market. And so we must also encourage Kenyan exporters to export into the Nigerian market, into the Burkinabe market, into the Mali, Niger. I mean, there's so many other West African countries that we can export to.
We are talking to His Excellency, the President of Ghana, John Dramani Mahama. But Your Excellency, I don't know how you feel or how you want to react if somebody should ask you this question, that the debt portfolio is said to be rising more rapidly as compared to development projects being financed. That would be, how would you feel like if somebody posed this question to you?
No, definitely it's not borne out by the statistics. Indeed, the debt is going down, because as part of the extended credit facility of the IMF, we're required to submit a public debt management strategy. And so that public debt management strategy was presented to the IMF, and both of us agreed that we'll put a cap on commercial borrowing. And so commercial borrowing for the last 3 years has been capped at $500 million per annum. And so we're not borrowing beyond that. Concessional credit does not have a cap, but we're careful about how much credit we're piling on. And so if you look at the growth that took place in the first part of this year, it was estimated that we grew at almost 5%, 4.9%. And so if you do the calculation of the debt to GDP based on that growth, then it means we're declined from 72% to 63%. And the debt indicator is pointing downwards. And so it's not growing, it is rather coming down. I'm sure that by next year we should be below 60% in terms of debt to GDP.
Thank you very much. I'm very grateful for your time this morning. But before
and that compares favorably with America. America is 77% debt to GDP.
Well, I will let you go off, but I just want to give you a teaser. Just taking a casual look at the just ended U.S. presidential debate, will you still stand by your challenge of one-on-one debate with Nana Akufo-Addo? Just a teaser for you.
Yes, I stand by it. I stand by it. I think debates are very important. When I threw the first challenge, I threw it because a lot of, you know, misinformation was being thrown all over the place. And Nana Akufo-Addo and his running mate continue to misinform the Ghanaian public. And that is why I said that let's have a one-on-one debate.
Okay.
if we have a one-on-one debate, we will all have our statistics and our figures, and we have to be able to see who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. They say the economy is in crisis. If we have a debate, you show why you think the economy is in crisis. The documents are all there, the statistics are there, you know. And so I believe that Ghanaians deserve a debate between myself and Nana Akufo-Addo, and I hope that they will respond and rise to the occasion. I mean, I watched the debate yesterday, and I believe it makes the people of the country get to know their candidates better and be able to make a sound judgment on who they want to continue to lead them. So, yes, I stand by the challenge I threw, and we'll wait to see if we get a response.
We pray it does happen. That's all. I want to thank you very much, Justin. But definitely, you have a message for the people of the world, or again, for that matter, Ghanaians in general, since we are live on almost all the stations across the country. A message for the world, during sent, for that matter, the whole of Ghanaians.
I'll just greet my compatriots in Ewe. I'll say, Novinho Midopena Mikata, Akpena Mikata. And thank you very much, too, for having me.
I'm grateful for your time this morning, sir. Thank you so much. And I wish you could have a successful talk, because we're just about rounding up in the photo region. We wish you all the best, sir. You wish yourself a good day.
Thank you so much.